Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we're going to be discussing in this episode originally came out on July 10th, 2008. And this is a special live edition, essentially, of the Weekly Comics Spotlight.
That's right.
We are sitting in Bob's room. You've seen the photos of it before. We'll be taking more photos of it. There's tons of stuff here. And we're getting ready for the San Diego Comic Book Convention, which should be loads of fun.
Yep, so we're recording two episodes in a row here, and one will go up on Monday the 21st, and then the next one will go up the following Monday the 28th.
Correct. And this was not a huge week for me, but, I mean, certainly smaller than the last couple we've had. I had 36 items, and all of them were comics. So nothing too exciting.
Item-wise, I had 46. I had 40 comics, 3 hardcovers, 2 trade paperbacks, and a Women of the DCU bust, which was Wonder Girl up there, the blonde one.
Ah, nice. Even better that you can point to it and I can see it.
Right over there. You people who are listening will have to go and look at the pictures once we get the new ones uploaded.
Yeah, it may take a little bit because, I mean, obviously we've got the convention coming up and, my God, you've got so much stuff here to take photos of. But definitely we want to try to do that justice. So, well, shall we dive into the first book?
Sure.
Which is, oops, pardon me as I pull it out. It is Batman Confidential number 19. This is the third part of the Bat and the Cat storyline. And what have you been thinking of it, Bob?
I'm really enjoying it, but I've always loved Kevin Maguire's art, and the story's pretty good, too. I mean, the story really is pretty simple. Commissioner Gordon, Catwoman steals Commissioner Gordon's notebook with his private notes in it, and Barbara, as Batgirl, is trying to get it back. So it's really just an excuse to have a big chase and multiple fight scenes between Batgirl and Catwoman. But well done, and the art is action-oriented, keeps the story moving along as we go through the issues. This is the third of 5 parts. And I think they did a good job for a middle chapter here. It was not lacking in action. And a nice reveal on the last page as to what's going to go on next time. So
yeah, I loved that reveal. That was great. For me, what really stands out with this is the Kevin Maguire art. This is a guy who really ought to be doing a monthly book because his art is just beautiful. And what I really enjoyed about this is not only was it good action and stuff, but he could have easily fallen back on kind of his signature from the early Justice League Bwahaha days of the facial expressions in doing right. All of that. This had a lot of really good action, some good characterization, and wasn't kind of, I don't want to say cliche Kevin Maguire art, but just really good stuff. This is probably, well, actually, I was going to say probably the best story in this series, but truth be told, I've only read this one and the previous one. I hadn't been picking this up ongoing, and I'm not sure if I picked up or pre-ordered the story after this.
Yeah, I had not picked up Batman Confidential until this arc. The first arc by Will Sportacio really didn't appeal to me, and I had just given it a miss. But when I saw the first issue of this arc on the rack at the local comic shop, it was so good, so I just had to pick it up.
Yeah. This is definitely one I would highly recommend. And even the page where the fight scene's taking place in silhouette, it's got a lot more happening there in terms of detail and stuff. It doesn't feel like the cop-out a lot of silhouette fight scenes can turn into, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So again, definitely recommend this, and I'm going to be keeping a closer eye on the contents of this title going forward than I had been in the past. Because like I said, it wasn't one I'd been getting. I wasn't a big fan of the art, like you were saying, in that first storyline. And part of it is it came out at the wrong time. You know, I was looking to cut back when this was launching, and it was just another kind of Batman title and an out-of-continuity one.
Right.
You know, it kind of fell into the same category as the JLA and JSA Classifieds of why are they doing this book and do they need to be?
So. I think you can get into a whole topic there. Why are they putting out so many titles? But, you know, they must be selling and they're making money off of them, so...
Yeah, clearly it's worth doing for them, so thumbs up for me.
Yep, thumbs up here too. Highly recommended. In fact, I would imagine that the three issues of this series should be still kicking around on the racks or in back issue bins or something. It'd be worth picking up, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would think it'd be easy to find.
Especially if you're a fan of Kevin Maguire.
Oh, certainly. Or, you know... And the other thing we didn't mention is this is the Barbara Gordon Batgirl. This place takes place in the back in the right. history in the past. So if you're a fan of that character,
right,
it'd be worth picking up.
We haven't seen her in a while. We haven't seen Barbara Gordon as Batgirl in a while.
Right. So and certainly they'll package this as its own trade. No question about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up is Secret Invasion number 4 of 8 from Marvel. And they do the reveal, I guess they did that at the end of the last issue, of Nick Fury and his group. What were your thoughts on this issue, Bob?
Well, you know, that was the thing. They did the reveal of Nick Fury and his group at the end of issue 3, and I was expecting that issue 4, I was going to see a lot of Nick Fury and his group handing down a major ass-kicking to the Skrulls, and I mean, they did for a couple of pages in the middle of the issue, but it really didn't focus as much on Nick Fury and his group as I was kind of hoping that it would. This, to me, suffered from middle chapter syndrome to some extent. I mean, I'm liking Secret Invasion in general, and I mean, I like the series quite a lot, but this particular issue... not as much happened as I was kind of hoping would happen with Nick and his, I guess they're calling them the Howling Commandos here.
Or Secret something. I don't know what the group's called, and that's something that when they introduced them, they really should have said.
Yeah, I mean, this group, I mean, this series, right, it's a nice, simple, high concept. You know, the Skrulls are invading the Earth, we... want to stop them. We don't want to be invaded, you know, and it's like the first half, you know, we're kind of, you know, not doing too well. They've got a very meticulously laid plan that they've been working on for years and years with all the infiltration and everything. And it looks like, especially with kind of the reveals they had at the end of the issue, that things are going to kick into high gear with the next one. Although, you know, I kind of thought that when we saw Nick Fury appear at the end of last issue. So I'm looking forward to number 5. Hopefully they'll actually accelerate the action in number 5.
This did feel like it was, I don't want to say an optional issue, but not a pivotal issue. You know,
nothing truly crucial seemed to happen here. But, I mean, it was a good story. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm enjoying how Bendis is telling the story. I mean, the weak link in this is I'm still mystified who at Marvel decided Lennell Yu was the right person to do their major crossover. He must have a tremendous number of fans that I guess I don't get it because I'm not one of them.
Well, overall, I'm not a fan of his stuff, but every once in a while, like this panel with Nick Fury when his group is introduced in the two-page splash at the top, but the one at the bottom right corner... that's nice, good art. He can do some good stuff, but by and large, I find his stuff, I don't want to say impenetrable, but harder to get into the story than it needs to be.
Well, he skips backgrounds on many of his panels. If you look through, at least 50% of the panels seem to have no or minimal background going on in them, which doesn't help. You know, they're just totally monochromatic or one, you know, kind of background. And maybe the background artist could tell. I mean, but I mean, look at like here, right? And the, I guess the page after the staple.
Right.
Right. I mean, they're obviously in a forest and it's like they, he doesn't draw any of the background in most of the panels here.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just kind of skips it. Maybe it makes it faster for him to draw or something. And then look at the next page. And they're in some kind of a room with relatively nondescript walls, but there's rubble and there's some cables and stuff. But, I mean, it's mostly blank, mostly nothing in the background.
Well, I think that goes to your earlier point about this kind of being, I don't want to say a blah issue, but they don't really reset the scene. They don't really reestablish the shots and the setup. Like, again, Nick Fury's group and stuff, they should have started back up, you know, at least when they come into the story with a, you know, here they are again, maybe give the roll call, whatever. By just kind of assuming you've just read the previous issues and you've got all this, you know, memorized and whatnot, like, okay, where's Tony? Why is he in this room? What's going on? That's, to me, that's a problem. And that's something that I see as symptomatic of writing for the trades. We're just supposed to know or remember who some of these characters are and what's going on.
Well, that, I mean, this is not as bad here as it was in some of his Avengers issues. You can at least differentiate who most of the people are, but I was kind of like drawing a blank as to, that's, is that Val Cooper or something who's like floating around in space out of the...
It's whoever's in charge of S.W.O.R.D., but I forget the character's name. And again...
Maybe it's not... Val Cooper's the one who's in charge of One.
Right.
So, yeah. But they don't give any kind of a... That's a good point, because a lot of times they'll at least put a caption or something on there. I think this whole series, though, seems to be running caption... Well...
No, they've got captions, and that's...
But the captions all seem to be quotes of what people are saying.
Well, it's the Skrull Queen telling the story to Nick, or to Tony, I mean.
Right. But, I mean, you know, they don't give any kind of establishing caption as to, you know, like, many times you could, you know, you see the person floating in space and, you know, they'll say, you know, XYZ, you know, leader of, you know, the S.W.O.R.D. satellite, you know, and they'll at least do some kind of establishing thing. Well, here they do it. S.H.I.E.L.D. Helicarrier Bermuda Triangle on this page, right?
Right.
They
right.
could have put something like that on this page so you kind of remember, oh, that's who that is and that's what's going on. And
well, because, I mean, the last couple of weeks have been pretty big for us. Figure about 50 comics for each of the last two, add another 30 for, you know, what else came out this week and the one, you know, again, before... The two big weeks. So we've read easily 150 or so comics, 160, 175, since issue 3 of Secret Invasion. Now, sure, right. Not everybody's doing this. I get that. But they should be making these stories a bit more accessible just to make it easier to hook the reader.
I think you read more comics than I have just because I've been...
You've been traveling, so yeah. Well, I've been driving. So.
Right. Well, I mean, I had a lot on my mind at work this last week. I mean, I had a lot of stuff going on. It was a big, you know, twice a year thing where we, reassess, you know, what everyone's doing. And it was, you know, a lot of intense thought had to go into it. So, again, you know, other people have jobs, right? You know,
I would think so.
You know, that, well, I mean, not everyone has a job that that's really mentally, you know, they have to think about. But, you know, those people who do, you got to throw your readers a bone that they might not be staring and rereading the comic multiple times and like keeping everything, you know, forefront of their mind, you know, over the course of a month, you know, so doing some reestablishing cues that might, you know, just having something like that's all that's really necessary sometimes is just having a little cue like S.H.I.E.L.D. Helicarrier over the Bermuda Triangle. It's like, oh yeah, you know, that gives you the hint. Okay, that's, I remember now what was going on there. And, you know, then you move on from there. But when you don't do that in some of the places, it makes it a little challenging.
Yeah, because you don't want your reader spending time figuring, trying to remember, now, who was this again? Where were they left off? What happened to them? And it doesn't need to be the old Claremont days of, you know, I'm Storm, I'm, you know, a mutant goddess who controls the weather. I'm tired, you know, don't like enclosed places. You don't need to give the whole life story. But again, a simple caption and reintroducing the characters.
I'm worried about Sentry. He's got one of his standard...
one of those, oh no, I'm about to flip out.
Yeah, you know, he's got a little tear coming down out of his eye. We're looking at page four here. You know, he's like, is he going to be going nutsoid on us again? This character has been really not utilized very effectively since his introduction. He spends most of his time weeping, moaning, and going insane. I just can't understand how this is a heroic figure.
I've read
Power of a Thousand Exploding Suns all wrapped up in one crybaby whiner shell, you know?
I mean, I've read probably every appearance of him, and there's nothing likable about the character.
Yeah.
I also found on this page the transition with him kind of flying, you know, in orbit or whatever, which, you know, that's his intro. Two panels later, he's out. It's like, okay, why do I care he was flying in space? You know, and
he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
It's
what's the point? I mean, overall, I'm really liking the Secret Invasion event. I'm liking the Secret Invasion series.
I'm liking the tie-ins more than I'm liking the main Secret Invasion book, as a matter of fact.
I would agree with that. And one of the things that really came out in this issue for me, when we see Ms. Marvel fighting the Super Skrulls and stuff, I really think Lin-El Francis Yu kind of, I don't want to say cut corners on drawing the Super Skrulls, but I didn't get the same level of interest in those characters as I did in the first issue of Captain Britain. Right. Where we were sitting there, it's like, oh, look at this.
Or in the Ms. Marvel issue, exactly, where she was fighting them. I mean, because there you find yourself drawn to these Super Skrulls saying, wow, look at that. I wonder, you know, and trying to puzzle out, you know, like what characters or what powers is this Super Skrull made up of? Because all the different Super Skrulls are all weird, different. Like this one maybe is Young Avengers or something, right?
Maybe. It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell.
One with a cap, kind of sort of torso, and an Iron Man glove, but that's all the clues we get.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying he should be knocking it out of the park for every little background character or whatever, but that's one of the things I've been enjoying about the tie-ins that this issue didn't deliver.
And you're certainly not distracted by any extraneous backgrounds on either of those panels, because they have no backgrounds.
Yeah. So. And I'm liking the art in this issue better than most of what he's drawn. I despised some of the art in the Avengers stuff he was doing. I just couldn't get into it. And there are panels here that if I didn't know it was him drawing it, I wouldn't guess from the work. This is, I think, better than a lot of his stuff in some respects. So, certainly it's a fun story. I like the who can you trust aspect of it. This is one that, if you didn't read, you're not missing a key moment in Marvel history or whatever.
But yeah.
It's one that, you know,
It's worth picking up. I mean, this particular issue, middle chapter syndrome, as I said earlier, but I mean, overall, the series is really good. I'm really liking the series. I'm loving the crossovers. Nice Marvel Universe spanning event. So
it's probably the Marvel event I've enjoyed most in recent years.
Yeah, I'm liking it a lot more than Civil War.
Yeah.
And a lot of the minor, you know, Silent War, World War, Hulk, I definitely am liking it more than those.
Yeah, I would agree with that. House of M, some of the others. This is
the best thing that they've done in a while.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our independent book, which is I Kill Giants number 1 from Image. And this is one that we found out about from Jason Wood when he was on our previews conference call that month, correct?
Right.
This is one that if he hadn't mentioned it would have totally slipped under my radar. And I thought this was really interesting.
This was my favorite book of the three that we looked at. I mean, and not to take anything away from the Batgirl one, you know, I like that one too, but this was, you know, something new and interesting. You know, I liked the whole concept here. You got like a young grade school girl, and she's, you know, I kill giants. You know, what do? I hunt giants, I fight giants, I kill giants, you know. And what's her name? Thorson or something like that?
Hang on, let me check. Barbara Thorson.
Yeah. So, you know.
Overall, I liked it. I agree that it's definitely different and unique from most of what's out there, most of what I'm reading. I love the whole motivational speaker talking to the class of, fifth graders. That was fun. The one area where this isn't clicking for me at the moment, and it may just take another issue or two, is the art. The art's good. It kind of fits this, but I just haven't gotten totally comfortable with it, if you know what I mean.
It's a really loose art style, but I was liking it because it's suited to the story that they're telling. You know, and this is the same kind of thing, you know, like we're just talking about Lenel Yu. I mean, if Lenel Yu was doing this book, I'd probably be a lot more accepting of his art. It's just he doesn't click for me on a mainstream superhero book. I have certain expectations on how the art should look on a mainstream superhero book.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you get some indie book, you know, that looks really wildly different, and that's good. You know, it really sets it apart from the mainstream superhero books, and that's a good thing.
Well, and again, I don't have any problems with the art. It's just a matter of essentially acclimatizing myself to it, if you will. You know what I mean?
Right.
If this was in a mainstream Marvel or DC book, I'd be very unhappy. This kind of reminds me more of, I almost want to say, a manga comic strip in places. With the expressions, with stuff like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a different style than most of what I read. And again, it's fitting the story. The story is good. It's fun. It's just, there are places where the art is almost, I don't want to say preventing me from getting into the story, but it's not getting me as deep into the story as I would like it to be. There are a few places where it's like, hang on, what's going on? Oh, okay, I get it now. This is something that, again, came very close to sliding underneath my radar and me missing completely. I enjoyed it. It's good. It's certainly worth checking out, and I'm very curious to see where it goes for the next couple of issues. This is something I can see getting fairly well received. Not to say that it will sell well, but I think the people who get it, I think there's going to be a vocal, positive fan following for this. It just strikes me that way.
Yeah, it's just a very interesting story. I mean, it's set mostly, it's the girl, I don't know if they say how old she is. She appears to be,
well, she's in fifth grade.
Fifth grade. So fifth grade is about, trying to do reverse math on, right? It's about nine.
Yeah.
Ten or 11, I guess. And, you know, she's in grade school and you got stuff going on at the school. She's on the bus ride home. You get a little bit of the family life going on. She's DMing a Dungeons and Dragons game with some of her friends. And then she goes off near the end and she's talking to some little fairies out in the grassland behind her house, it looks like.
Well, it's interesting because this entire issue could have been just set up and kind of, I don't want to say dismissed as such, but it didn't feel that way. We got a good grasp of this character. She was fully developed. I certainly came to care about that character, and the does she really kill giants or not became a question. And really, up until that last bit at the end, it could have gone kind of either way, and it still could, but it definitely leans towards, yeah, she does kill giants.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, until you have the fairies, you know, is she just nuts, especially when they introduce the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, is she just, you know, got some fantasy world in her head, you know, are we going to end up with Pan's Labyrinth going on here? But I don't believe that that's the case. Although, you never know, Pan's Labyrinth, you had the things that only the girl could see, and she was kind of nutsy.
Yeah. There was the page before the older sister comes home that it's like, okay, where are they going with this? That didn't quite work for me, but yeah. This is one that, again, they could have easily, it could have very much felt like this was all set up and no payoff. But this, this paid off even early in the issue with the characterization for her when she goes to see the principal, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, black and white book, which I think suits the story. I don't think this would benefit from color. I think that would detract from it. So, worth checking out.
Yep, definitely worth giving it a read.
The other thing, which I wish I'd remembered to mention at the beginning, is we're going to play a promo at the end of this episode for Comic Addiction. They have recently changed their domain name, so if you're looking for that podcast, it is now at thecomicaddiction.com. So go check them out, give them a listen, and see what you think.
The one other thing I wanted to mention is the Pulp Tales, which is a Josh Madore's benefit comic. It's coming out from Boom Studios. And it is, Josh has been diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, we've lost some various people. And there's always, after the person's passed away, we, you know, see these benefits for their survivors. And here, you know, buy this book and get some proceeds to this guy in advance so that maybe he can beat this thing.
Yeah.
So it's coming out. There's going to be a cover by Ben Temple Smith, and there's also a cover by, Josh Madore's himself also. And all proceeds go to Josh and his family. It's going to ship in September. The order code is July, J-U-L, 083759.
Cool.
You can pick that. Now, there's a regular one. The Ben Temple Smith cover is $3.99. Then there's a donation cover, which is $9.99. But it's basically, it's just that extra money is going directly to Josh and his family.
Now, there's a good use of an alternate cover with a higher price. Yeah. I respect that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's not just somebody's going to be making more money off of it. It's just the extra money's going, for benefit.
Well, and keep in mind that a lot of these creators and stuff are, you know, essentially self-employed. They don't have necessarily the medical benefits and the insurance coverage that a lot of those of us who do the 9-to-5 stuff have. And medical expenses can get, you know, it can be very expensive, particularly with something like cancer. So, definitely a worthy cause, something worth checking out and supporting.
Right.
So, we think that does it?
I think so.
Join us next week when we discuss Final Crisis Rogue's Revenge number 1 from DC, Marvel 1985 number 3 from Marvel, and The Helm number 1 from Dark Horse Comics.
Hey, comic fans and addicts, this is Chris Parton from Comic Addiction. You may have noticed that Comic Addiction's website, found at www.comicaddiction.com, is no longer there. Have no fear. Angela, Anthony, Derek, Ed, Guy, Isaac, Idea, Rob, Paul, and I are still around. It can now be found at our new web address, www.thecomicaddiction.com. The site will be slowly returning each day with new reviews, features, editorials, interviews, and yes, podcasting, as well as an archive of content we've put together over the last 2 years. We're no longer just Comic Addiction, we're THE Comic Addiction, where it's not a hobby, it's an addiction.
The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.